I felt and saw this presence of something like a ghost.
As I was reaching for my keys, something growled at me coming out of the basement.
It was bad energy. I was sort of feeling like I was letting Satan out of hell.
I saw out of the corner of my eye what I thought was the girl falling off the roof.
I couldn't think. It was so loud and I was so terrified that I just froze.
I'm not calling for that. I'm calling because I'm freaking out here.
I felt this presence try to push itself down on top of me very violently.
It would not go away. It's freaking me out. I look at my arm and it's got a scratch on it.
Welcome, everybody. Thanks for being here. We're very excited that you've showed up again, and we are extremely excited to tell you stories about Greystone, the ghosts of Greystone. My name is Cleet.
And I'm Chris.
And we're those Keith brothers, and I worked at Greystone for 22 years.
18 years.
There you go, 18 years. So we have a lot of knowledge about the property itself and mostly about the ghosts. So we're going to get into it right away, just getting right off the bat.
Starting off, we're going to do the Grand Hall and then the card room, but let's start with the Grand Hall.
Okay, the Grand Hall has apparitions for sure. We'll talk about those. It also has sounds. I don't want to tell you what kind of sounds because we're going to play them for you. And it also has poltergeist activity in the card room and that leads right off the Grand Hall.
Are we going to talk about that?
What's that?
Poltergeist?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's get into, what is it? What are we doing first?
First, do the Grand Hall? Is Luz.
Okay. Luz. Luz, I won't give her last name. I'm trying not to give last names, but it's going to come out eventually.
It's in the book.
It's in the book. Luz Rodriguez. Thank you. Is that what you wanted to hear? Okay. Love her. Really sweet person. And she came to Greystone to talk to me about her stories. Now, she had the most of anybody in the book that I wrote. She had 24 separate stories,
wow.
which is incredible. And so I got her to come back and walked her through the house and said, you lead me. And immediately things started happening, although things did happen during our walk. Two things happened. I don't know if we'll get to those. Not tonight. Today. But two things did actually happen. She was touched and a voice came through in our conversation,
right,
which was amazing.
Right.
So the first thing that happened to her in the Grand Hall is she would go out and she would clean the terrace windows when it was slow. And she could see through the card room into the Grand Hall. Let's let Luz tell us what happened.
Okay.
I saw who I believe to be Ned standing in the right here in the middle of the hallway.
And the Grand Hall here.
The Grand Hall.
Mm-hmm.
He was wearing, it was like a, he was see-through. And I was out there cleaning the windows. And I looked up and there was someone standing there. And at first I thought it was someone like back here at the door, or maybe there was a reflection of someone behind me. There's no one behind me, and he was just standing there. It was cut off, like you couldn't see his entire leg, but he was almost like floating, and it was see-through.
Wow.
I mean, he was wearing like a reddish, like a smoking jacket, and he just stood there, like looking at me. And I was just like I still get chills. And I was just like, okay. Hi, Ned. And then I thought, okay, my mind is playing tricks, you know, because you see a lot of pictures of him, you know, like he's got that actor screenshot, you know, where it's just his head and his hair is neatly combed. And so I thought, okay, it can't be right. I couldn't see his shoes. It was like he was not fully materialized almost, you know?
She talked about the smoking jacket.
Yeah.
Now, we've never validated that, but we have pictures of him in a smoking jacket, but they're black and white.
Right.
So I never know.
When they found him dead in the murder room, he was laying in what looked like a smoking jacket. Yeah. And
which is remarkable.
Yeah. And one of the other things, several things in this. One is a lot of the people that you hear when we do these stories, you'll hear people with justifications because it's so bizarre. They don't know how to justify it. So they say, I wasn't in my right mind. All that stuff, I've heard it all. And the idea that you would see, now, do you see how she said she handled that? She said, hello
yeah,
there, Ned.
Yeah, yeah. You think she was like handling it like
well,
that?
Well, I think she had things happen in her life where she had those abilities. Oh, so it wasn't.
It's kind of normal.
Yeah, for me, I saw it on myself. I would. I would look at it and it's over. I couldn't take it because it's too, and especially she's at the house alone.
Yeah.
She's by herself.
It's very
and she's
scary.
Seeing a guy transparent, see-through. By the way, she said no legs.
Right.
Or one leg. But there are other stories of seeing people without any legs. Two other stories that I'm thinking of right now that are floating as well. So I thought that was fascinating. And that's not the only time she saw Ned, by the way. So isn't that pretty great?
It is. It's excellent.
I love that
another
story.
Apparition story, by the way.
Yeah.
And this one is Brooke.
Brooke. Okay. So Brooke is one of my favorite people. She worked for the city. She may still be working for the city. Sorry about that, Brooke. And her story is pretty fascinating. And when I got her to come into Greystone with me and to go through that story, we went right to the location where she was. Let's just play it.
I was in the house, and this was one night during the week, and it was probably around 9, 10 o'clock at night. And I was with my boyfriend. Mm-hmm. He was a ranger. His name was Brennan.
What was his name?
Brennan Knight. So we were in here about 9, 10 o'clock at night. Obviously, nobody's in the park. Nobody's in the house. We come inside here, and he goes to the bathroom right in here.
In the ladies' bathroom.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm waiting for him right here, and I'm just standing here, just kind of looking around, and I turn my head to the left, and I look right down the hallway right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I look right outside that glass door.
Okay, right outside the west door.
And again, it's dark inside the house. The only lights that were coming through would be the city lights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Through the card room.
So this hallway is dark, and then you can see a little bit of lighting from outside. And all of a sudden, from this direction on the left, going that way, I see a lady, but she was small, so it could have been like a girl, just floating past that window right there.
Now, past the window, meaning on the outside?
Outside.
Okay.
Wearing a white dress. And when I say she wasn't just walking, she was floating because she was literally about 10 inches off of the ground. And she's wearing a long white dress. And you can't see any feet coming through. And she's just floating. And she's literally like floating, just bouncing like this. And went from this side to that side, and that was it.
Now, could you tell what her, I'm asking this question for a reason, could you tell what her hair looked like? Do you remember?
I honestly don't even remember if I saw any type of face.
Okay.
I was just so shocked that I saw a long white dress that was literally floating in front of my eyes, and it went over there, and that was that.
God, I love these stories.
What's the distance that she's saying it went from there to there? About how far was that?
Well,
do you remember?
If you're in the Grand Hall, standing where we were, which is right outside the card room in the Grand Hall,
okay.
And we're looking west, which is to the west door.
Right.
So she's looking at the glass in the door. It's glass. So with like leaded glass, right? It's leaded glass. And I'm going to say that glass is probably about three and a half feet wide.
Okay.
So she's seeing the apparition go from right to left through that glass. and on. Now when you keep going, you're going into a wall, another 4 feet. You're into the wall, into the murder room, actually. Hmm. That's where she is.
Okay.
So once it's a
what we call the murder room. What they call
it. What he calls it. I don't think it's right. So, but the once again, we hear about a woman in white. That's going to be a theme throughout all these stories. We keep seeing a woman in white. Now, she said, I have to talk about this. She said that it was more like maybe a girl. That's going to be another theme as well.
Mm-hmm.
That now, was this a girl in white or was it a woman in white? We have both stories that are told by other people of women and girls.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know if it's the same person, same spirit, what have you. But and imagine, that's it. Honest to God, I had the privilege of working there all those years. But if you're in there at night, it changes everything. You can be in there during the day, during an event. And you know what it's like. You're
it's
in
no
there.
Big deal.
What a beautiful place. At night, the atmosphere changes, the barometric pressure, everything changes to allow the spirits to show, I believe.
And it's a little creepy. I have to say, I feel a little creepy. I don't feel any vibe or anything, but it is creepy.
Yeah, it just changes everything. Yeah. And those that have the gift feel the creep, feel the vibe. And here's Brooke, who's just waiting for her boyfriend, Brennan Knight, by the way, who's also had some stories in this.
Yeah.
In the book.
All right, let's jump.
Okay, I'm excited.
Keep this
going.
Moving.
All right, what's good? What's next?
The next is just off the Grand Hall, as you've been saying, is the card room.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So it's little history of the card room, and then we'll get to Dan.
Okay. So is there anything there about Martin? Because I thought I had a story of Martin.
We do have Martin.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Can I talk about that?
Okay. Go ahead.
Because that was
this is still in the Grand Hall.
Yeah. So Martin was what do you call it? A porter, day porter. So he'd come in and clean. And he was there for maybe a year or something like that, maybe a little more. But he would come in and clean, and Martin had the gift. So again, here we go. Luz has the gift. Steve Clark has the gift. Juan Andrade it's really pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And so
maybe they're drawn to it, like you said. Maybe there's just something about working there. I don't know.
Well, Martin had some things happen to him when he was a child, and I'm not going to talk about them because they were very personal, but boy, oh boy, were they horrifying. So,
yeah.
And by the way, the anonymous police officer that's down the road in these stories, he has the gift as well.
Oh.
And he had a thing happen to him as a child that is off the charts horrifying. But Martin had something happen to him, so I think it happened to him when he was a child because he has the gift.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes in and he'll be on throughout the show talking about things that happened. He's a very quiet guy. But this time he was in the Grand Hall.
Right.
And he was cleaning and something, I'm not going to tell you
Let's
what happened.
Let them. Let's
something
let them hear
something
it.
Happened.
Okay.
Yep.
This was in the Grand Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And it would honestly sound like there's a gunshot being fired in the house. It would echo so loud, I couldn't tell if it was either coming from upstairs or on the bottom floor.
I have recordings of that, but I've never heard it in person.
Really?
With my own ears. But I have tons of recordings of what sound like gunshots, but you actually heard?
Yeah, it's in the house, it echoes. In a way, it sounds like a loud snap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, almost like a clap, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really loud. Who knows which way it's coming from.
I've always wanted to see if I could hear that, and I never have.
Because you know, during the time that they have the plays, you know, they reenact it on the staircase. I honestly feel like, and they have that snap, bang.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly feel like it's like doing the same thing by the staircase, snap, that bang.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, is that wild?
Yeah.
So what he's referring to is he said when they do the play, there was a play called The Manor. I don't think they're doing it there anymore. They would come in, and it was a play called The Manor, and it was about, based upon the family, the Doheny family. And at the end of the play, on the stairs by the grand...
It's interactive, right? The play is interactive.
Yeah, you
the crowd
go from room
follows.
To room. There's like four or five rooms you go into,
right.
Which is kind of cool because it's only on the first floor, not on the second floor. But the cool thing about it is you get to do the interaction. But at the not so cool thing to me was at the end of the play, they have a scene where someone gets shot. Now, we know that people got shot in that mansion, and here they are doing a play where somebody gets shot. I didn't think that was the greatest of taste, yeah, my own opinion.
I agree.
But it's like, I'm not sure that was the best thing to do in there. And reason being, they're trying to come up with the story of the family and what happened, but it's also, there are spirits still inside that house. They're watching this. I know this. I know I sound like a complete nut, but I truly believe, I know they're in there. You're hearing it. Yeah. The spirits are in the house, and they're watching them reenact a play that isn't really what happened that night.
Right.
And at the end of the play, the guy has a gun, and he shoots. And the gun is, well, it's you know, with the blanks in it and stuff like that. So they can't have it like a 45, like, you know, like Dirty Harry on the grand entry, but it's like a small 22.
That's still loud.
It's still loud. Still okay. Loud. And we're gonna, at the end of this episode, you get an idea of what we're talking about. But that is pretty crazy. And I have recorded other sounds of guns in the house, and there's nobody in the house, and there are gunshots going off. And so what that is residual. It's, to me, the one recording I got on December 15th, 2015 is the gunshot that went off in the house. If you hear it, it's astounding, and it echoes, and it's loud, and it's like that is embedded into the walls of this mansion. And that kind of energy, that kind of vibration can do that. Now, we can't hear it with our own ears the way we are, but you use a recorder, which gets different, I guess, levels or what have you, frequencies. And I caught it, and I caught it big time. You'll hear it down the line.
All right, let's get
to, I'm excited tonight.
I know
this
you
is,
are.
I love this.
It's a good show.
I love this.
Yeah. Let's jump to now the correct one. Let's go to the card room and Dan.
Oh. This one is fabulous, and I love it because Dan's my buddy. Dan Hernandez, okay, I'm going to say it. I know you don't want me to do, but Dan Hernandez, he's one of my best friends, and he is still up there. Tell him Cleet sent you. So Dan was there and called me after a morning about what took place. He went from the card room to the terrace, which is right outside. There are doors that lead out to the terrace.
You want to talk about that after his interview?
Let's go ahead with Dan's interview.
Okay.
Right after this.
My week starts on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So I came in Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably about 8 o'clock in the morning. Nobody was in the park. I come in, open up the courtyard. I walk through the front door. I disarm the mansion. Disarm the alarm on the mansion. And I knew we had a wedding that Saturday night, the day before. So I walked down into the card room, and I was looking at the marble floor to see what damages, any spillage from that wedding. And yeah, the room looked dirty. It wasn't that bad, but it could use some cleanup. So I'm there, and I go back outside. I walk up the steps, I exit through the front door. I walk around the mansion to the terrace, and I was looking at the slate, how much spillage and all that was on the slate. Maybe I needed to wash down, hose down. And when I get out to the terrace, all the card room doors were open.
And they opened to the terrace, right?
They opened to the terrace.
Okay.
When, in fact, I was just in the card room and they were all closed. So immediately, I get on the phone and I call Steve. Steve Clark is the other park ranger supervisor who works the Saturday. And I called him, and I was in shock. And it's not like I was calling him to say, hey, you didn't lock up these card room doors. I was calling him because I was in shock, and I really couldn't talk. He says, all these card room doors were open. He's like, I could have sworn I latched them all, and we double-checked. And I says, I'm not calling for that. I'm calling because I'm freaking out here. And he says, wow. And I said, this is unreal. They're all open. I'm standing here on the terrace. There's no one around. I said, and then again, these doors could not have been, the alarm could not have been set with these doors open. or ajar or moving all night. I was in shock, Lee, and again, you know, that is just another thing that reassured me that this place was active and they wanted my attention.
Wow. Now, where were you recording him? In the card room, right there in the little area?
In the card room, yeah. Okay. So you're gonna hear people in the background if there are other rangers or other people prepping for an event or something. So throughout these shows, you'll hear people in the background or outside, patrons walking behind interviews. But the thing with Dan saying near the end, which I always think about, he says, the alarm couldn't have been set. Well, he knows that they were closed when he walked in there.
Right,
he's looking.
Right.
That's a justification again, because you just can't understand it. Now, let me tell you about how long it takes to get from where Dan is inside the card room out to the terrace. You walk up the grand steps there, the entry. You go out the door. You turn left. You turn left down some steps. You go down past the reflection pond on the right, and you're out onto the terrace. 30 seconds? 45 seconds?
Closer to 45, 50 seconds.
Okay. These doors are a pain. They're arched like French doors. There are three sets, two doors each in each set. You have to unlock the little handle, I guess you call it, to open the door. You have to go up there, what are called canes. They're metal canes that go into hoops up here to lock it up top, and canes that go into bottom. Two for each door, two for the doors of that one French door set, and then you have to open up the handle. And then you got to pull them in. And sometimes, most of the time, they'll stick because they hardly ever open them. So, and that's for each of
it would take you 45 seconds to open up one set of doors.
Longer than that. Because some of them are just, they're stuck.
Right.
The canes are stuck because we don't open those doors.
Right.
So this is what's so crazy when I talk about poltergeist. The amount of energy that was needed from this spirit or spirits to open three doors, six really altogether, because each door has two, each panel has two, all the way open, in 45 seconds?
Yeah, no, that can't happen.
Yeah, it's impossible, and that's why he was in shock.
Right.
And that's why he's calling Steve and saying, what are you doing? And Steve's going, I thought he locked. No, I'm not talking about that.
Well, Dan was freaked out.
Yeah.
What about Steve?
Okay. Again, I keep saying one of my favorites, but honest to God, they're all good stories. So you're gonna love this one. This one knocked me out. So we would do a design show. At one period, it was like one every 10 years. One every year for 10 years.
Right.
Good Lord, give me another beer. We would have a show where designers come and they. Let's say it's Lux magazine. They did it one year. So the designers from Lux, they come in and they go, I want to buy the card room. They pay for the card room. Then they bring in, it's like a design house in Pasadena. So they end up designing the room. The card room was designed by a woman named Lisa Turner, who was awesome. And she decided that she was going to take that room and do it in Stevie Wonder. And it was, I almost said it. Like Icons, Major Icons. Oh, I think it was something along those lines. Major Icons of
Legends?
Something like that.
I can't remember the title of it.
We'll look at it later. But so she decided to do it, and she put in a piano, and she put in like these trumpets and trombones that were bent together, really awesome, awesome looking, up on the wall. And over on the other side was a big video thing showing Stevie Wonder playing. Really cool room. And then also had like these two tall statues that were beautiful and everything. And let's let Steve tell the story.
Would you?
You think so? Sorry. Okay.
That's right.
That morning we were just opening up and, you know, it was the sun wasn't quite up. And the first thing we did when we come in, we start turning lights on just so we could get through the house and all that. And, I just remember I was coming this way, down the hallway, and, you know, I just naturally look at the view, and as I looked, one of the statues, I swear, moved.
turned as I was walking. And I stopped, and then I actually went up to the statue and was looking at it, you know, and all this. And then I'm like, okay, my imagination, and continued on, turning lights on. And then when she came in about 11 or noon that day, she was all worked up because she said somebody had moved her statue away from the wall, which I didn't even notice at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it just was where it was, and, you know, I just was looking at it and, you know, giving it a once-over, but I actually walked up to it. You know, and then she came in and she's like, you know, called us saying somebody moved my statue, and that's when I told her what happened.
So
those were old like ceremonial masks, African masks, you know, with on the stand, and then the beaded, you know.
And the beads were rocks.
Yeah.
So the statues weighed 300 pounds. That's what she told me.
Yeah, they were big.
Yeah.
Tall.
So. You also told me that day when you called me about it, you said that you went up to it and pointed at it and said, you just moved.
I said something, yeah. I mean, I was just being silly. I was by myself.
Right.
But, yeah, I went up and, you know, the sun was just starting to come through because I took a photo that morning of it with the sun coming right up here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was still over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I said something like, you're not going to scare me or something silly, you know, just...
You know, you told me on the phone, you said, you pointed and said, you just moved and you took a photo of it.
Yes, and I did take a photo because I swear it had moved.
Okay, let's break this down a little bit. First of all, it turned out, and even after Steve and I chatted, and I think Lisa will talk about this, but it turned out that both statues moved. It just wasn't the one.
Yeah, I heard that afterwards.
Yeah, Steve saw the one because when he walked and looked into the room and that one moved, then it was like, that's what he focused on. But the other one also moved. So when she came in, I think they both moved. But once again, justification.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but then I don't know. But because it's, if you were to see these statues... They're really tall. They're like 6.5 foot tall. And the dresses were beads that were rocks that were hollowed out.
Really, really
on
heavy.
On string. So it took 2 to 3 guys, and I think she may have even said, maybe she'll say it, 3 to 4 guys to bring these in. They were that heavy. And this, they're just sitting here, and they move when he looks at it. I think it was just
I can't
just
explain
incredible.
That one.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, for the skeptic or whatever, it's like you can't really justify that. Thank you. I brought that back around. I tell you what. So after that.
You talked to Lisa.
I got a hold of Lisa because I wanted to find out what her thoughts were. And these were her thoughts.
Oh, when I came in, it looked like, you know, I had these really tall sculptures. Mm-hmm. And they were by an artist called Woodrow Nash. And these sculptures, you cannot move. One person, two people can't move them. I had to have a crew come in to even bring them in. And they kind of, set them near the windows side by side in line. Basically, they were balanced within the room. And one morning I came in, and one, I think they looked like they were, one was up forward. And one was back, like it had moved. And what was so strange is wouldn't it be anybody could move these. And they were called, the actual sculptures are called spirits.
Mm.
And so, and they're African, I guess, I don't know if he takes them for certain warriors or whatever, but there were spirits. And remember we were laughing because this had really moved. And I was like, there's no way someone could move these, you know? And I couldn't even move them back or put them into position. Not even several people could move them. So I always thought that was really kind of, you know, we kind of use it as a joke. And I had no idea the mansion was haunted until I guess we spoke after that, right, about it?
Right.
So, yeah, that was very, very strange. And they stayed in that position the whole time. Once they were moved up, we just could not move them back, so they were there throughout the show. When they came in, there were 4 guys that had to bring them in. I think that was really – it's just a real weird experience. And I was thinking, could someone do that? I mean, why would someone want to do that? Even if it was four guys or whatever.
Yeah, what would the point be just to move that one statue to get you upset or something? What was the point?
I don't know. It was just very, very strange. The mansion just has that feel. I mean, I don't care how many rooms you decorate, how much you do to it. It has this haunted or actually cold feeling to it, like not a warmth to it that most homes or mansions have. It's a very different feeling to it. I don't care what you do to it. I mean, and you've got all these talented designers. Whatever they do, it just never feels like you would say is a home. You know, it's something there.
Yeah.
It's something
very
cold about it. And probably at one time it was a warm kind of feeling about coming home, but it's definitely not a coming home feeling. Home.
And Frank found that out, didn't he?
Frank could tell you his experience because he had a wild one, and that was during the time everyone was touring the home, and he had come in, I didn't even know what was happening. He didn't even tell me. He just left really fast, you know? And so I didn't know until when I got home what really happened to him.
First of all, the sweetest person in the world, you can tell.
She's fantastic.
God, I love her. And what was... Now, we didn't, so I'm going to get into what I did, because that's not in the recording. And what happened was, once that took place, I had a recording setup that I had four camera recording with onto a whole DVR deal. And so I told her, I said, look, I don't know what happened. They did move. What I'll do is I'll put these cameras in your room for the full night. And we'll watch every angle and we'll see what moves. And if something comes in, a spirit, whatever it's going to be, we'll catch it. She said, great. So I did that. And next morning came in, got all the cameras and unit, got it out of there before the show began. And when I got a chance to look at all the cameras in real time, I went back because there were African masks and all that stuff. So she thought, were these, you know, haunted and all that stuff? And that's what did everything. So I went back to her and I said, I think I know what it is. She goes, you found it? I said, yeah, I think I know what it is. She goes, what is it? I said, it's Steve Clark. And she just looked at me like, huh? I told that to Steve and he laughed. But I believe it to be true. And the fact that Steve Clark has the gift, he has the ability to connect with spirits, they can see that. Spirits can see that on the other side. They can see the aura. They can see the vibe that you can connect with them, and they're going to do whatever it takes to get your attention. And so a great way would be to move 600-pound statues toward you. So and she was like, oh, my God, she couldn't believe it. But she mentioned her husband, Frank, and another – these two together, they're just the greatest. And I didn't know anything had happened to Frank. I saw him at the show. He was there to support his wife, and he was in the room, Stevie Wonder's room, just looking and talking to people. And then at the end, after the show was over and they started taking things down, that was the time I had mentioned to Frank, did somebody said something happened to you? He goes, oh, my God. I said, I'll call you, and let's talk about it. So I gave Frank a call to find out what happened the night of, I think was late afternoon, of one of the shows. What happened to him?
I toured the home and I was kind of standing in the corner watching Lisa. Lisa was talking to some guests. And I felt this breeze go past me. And I got so cold. And I said, oh, it's kind of strange what's going on. And then I got colder and colder to the point where I started shaking. And I was going to go tell Lisa I need to leave because I'm just freezing. But I was shaking so much that I didn't want to approach her, and my teeth were chattering. And I didn't want to go to Lisa because I was literally shaking. I was so cold, and I didn't want to... So, you know, go, Lisa, and I was almost embarrassed. So I had to leave. And I said, the only thing I could think of was getting in my car and turning on the heat. So I got in my car and I turned on the heat. And I said, I need to drive home. And I turned the heat up as high as I could get it. And I remember driving down Highland near Sunset, and I was still shaking. Mm. And I couldn't get warm. And I said, this is strange. I'm gonna go to Kaiser. So I drove to Kaiser, and I told them, I'm just shaking. I'm so cold. I don't know what's going on. So they took me in emergency, and I saw a doctor. And the doctor says, well, you know, your oxygen is fine. We can't, you know, you don't have a fever. I said, yeah, doctor, but feel my hands. He said, yeah, you're pretty cold. And he said, well, the next suggest is you take a cup of aspirin and go home and get warm. He said, you could be coming down with something. We don't know, but you don't have a fever. And I said, okay. And I just left, and I came home, and I got in a hot tub of water. And that's the only thing that really took away that feeling of cold. After about an hour, you know, I kind of came back to normal, but it was very strange.
Now, that was back in before COVID, pre-COVID,
oh, yeah,
2018.
Yeah.
And you want to comment on his cold feelings?
Yeah. So for those of us who are in the paranormal world, and for those of you who aren't, it's a known fact, and you can see it on all the shows, all the ghost shows that are on television, everything. A lot of times that when ghosts or spirits are around you, they go, oh my God, do you see how cold this is? Mm. Look at my arm. You see the goosebumps on their arms because they're dropping that temperature. They're gathering, I guess a lot of times they say they're gathering energy. And they become extremely cold. And there's another story up on the second floor servants' wing of someone that got really cold as well. And so when that happens, that's usually a spirit around you. Now, it appears to me, and this is just my feelings, that Frank was probably jumped, possibly.
What do you mean by jumped?
But the spirit went inside of him. Because just I know, but to me, if that's the case, or maybe it attached itself. It didn't have to jump within his body. But
is attached different?
Yeah, attached is not within. You can attach yourself to someone and take a ride in a cab, but you're not inside the person in the cab. Makes sense?
Yeah,
I don't think so. But anyway, a lot of times we had another guy who was jumped. You'll hear about him. This may be an attachment for Frank. Bottom line was that he ended up feeling so cold that he went to the hospital. And then when he went home and got in the tub, in a hot, warm tub, it was gone. And I think it just let go and got out.
Yeah, you said he was cold literally from 2 to 8, 6 hours.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a spirit going through you. I don't think so. To me, that sounds like an attachment. And Frank is not into paranormal.
No.
He's a normal, cool dude, nice guy.
Not like Cleet.
Not like me. He's watching his wife do the show, and suddenly, boom, he gets. But he's in Greystone. He's in the mansion, and man, things like that happen.
Crazy,
right?
Crazy.
I love that story.
Yeah, it's a good story.
Yeah,
I love them.
Yeah.
Let's go to our sounds.
Okay, so this is going to be this. I chose this sound because of what we just talked about. And Martin talked about a sound that he heard, and you'll hear it, and then we'll talk about it. But this is going to be Dan Hernandez. Should I use his last name?
Sure. He already did.
Dan Hernandez would, if I was not working that day and I was home, I'd say, hey, Dan, could you leave the recorder at the center of the second floor landing? Yeah, I got it. Okay. So then Dan would do that for me. This is Dan leaving the recorder, and then hear what happens when Dan walks away from the recorder.
All right. 4:42 p.m., March 3rd. Sunday, that is. See you tomorrow.
Now, Dan, he was in there while when that thing went off, and he never heard it.
No, because he would have come back. Even if he... Right. Now, you can hear him walking away, and he's walking on wood, so that's the second floor landing. Bottom stairs, it's marble. So he's walking away. If you go all the way to the servant's wing, you're still going to hear that.
Oh, absolutely.
And it sounds almost like a cap gun or like a 22 with...
I don't know guns.
Yeah, but okay. But point being, it's not a 45 like Dirty Harry shooting a gun in the mansion, right? So it's got, what do they call it inside?
Gunpowder? You mean blanks?
Yeah, blanks. So it sounds like a 22 blank because I saw the play. Mm. And I saw them do the shooting at the end, and it sounded like that. And we're going to hear it again. Can we do one more?
Sure.
One more. Do you hear the echo? That's an empty mansion. That's a residual sound. Now, whether that was the night of the murder or suicides, or it was the night of one of the plays... Mm-hmm. And that's in the walls. That's the vibration that's still within the walls. I don't know. But it was there. And I even asked Dan. I played it for him. He goes, I never heard that. Never heard it.
And he would have said something. He would have said, oh, my gosh, I was in there and I heard it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just love this place. I love these stories and because they're all real. And it is one of the most haunted places that you'll ever attend if you go to the events that they have there.
Yeah, it's great.
It's just fantastic. It's great. Just a great place.
All right, so, let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up.
Everybody, if you can, like, subscribe, join up so you know what's going on with us in future episodes. And if you have any comments about the show, leave the comments below or wherever. And also, if it's something personal and you don't want to leave it for all the public to see, go to ghostsofgreystone.com and send us an email and tell us your story, and you may make the show.
Maybe
tell us something about if you've had an experience at Greystone.
Yeah, that would be fantastic because maybe we can chat and put you on the show, which would be fun. Or have you sit in Chris's place.
Well, you're welcome to.
Wouldn't that be better? So listen.
Next show?
Yeah.
The episode?
What is it?
Living room.
Ooh. Living room is fantastic. It's the biggest room in the house. Frank Kauf, I'm going to get into all that stuff, why it's the biggest room and why it was built like the way it was.
You talk about mists and black masses and orbs?
Yeah. There were orbs. There were mists that we'll get into, a black mass that looked over the balcony down to us down below.
Oh.
And sounds, actual sounds of voices. This is a great, that's going to be a great show.
Can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, so listen. Forget everything that you've heard tonight. The main thing is, just because you can't see it, doesn't mean it isn't there. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next show.
100 horses in 5 freight trains couldn't drag me into that early grave. I've cashed in the mistakes I've made while God rode shotgun from a million miles away. I don't wake in sorrow, I don't walk in shame, I don't deal in hearsay, I don't dwell in blame. Sometimes it's best to forget what I know and what they say, but this ain't that time, and this ain't that day. I walked riding till the trail grows cold, where the hillsides burn amber in smoke. The sheep and the shepherd are lost on different roads, blinded by hate, blinded by hope. I don't wake in sorrow, I don't walk in shame, I don't deal in hearsay, I don't dwell in blame. Sometimes it's best to forget what I know and what they say, but this ain't that time.
And this ain't that time.
I don't wake in sorrow, I don't walk in shame, don't deal in hearsay, I don't dwell in blame. Sometimes it's best to forget what I know and what they say, but this ain't that time.
No, this ain't that time.
And this ain't that day.